So welcome back, everybody, on the afternoon session. We are looking forward to a very tough afternoon, like three 20-minute talks before the coffee break, and then two more 20-minute talk after the coffee break. The first talk is by Bernardo Araneda, who is going to talk about twistor geometry, nonlinear structures, and perturbation theory.
Please. Okay, thanks. Okay, so first I would like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to present my work. So this talk is about some connections between ideas from twistor theory and structures in perturbation theory in general relativity, both at the linear and especially at the nonlinear level. So we know that there are some remarkable mathematical structures involved in the study of the perturbation theory of black holes. In particular, we have hidden symmetries associated to killing-like objects. Then there are the Tucholsky scalar equations together with symmetry operators that produce field reconstructions. And there are also several results concerning separability and integrability of these equations. So this is all well known, but there are actually more hidden symmetries. So in order to see what these extra symmetries are, let me first recall that the Tucholsky equations are known to involve a quite complicated second-order differential operator. But it was shown 20 years ago that they can be written in this very compact and elegant form using a modified Levi-Civita connection. But the geometry of this connection at this point is not clear. On the other hand, regarding hidden symmetries, it is known that they are originated in the existence of something that is called a Killing spinor, which is a solution to this spinorial equation here. So this equation is very similar to the twistor equation, which is this equation here, but the twistor equation is simpler. So one may wonder, well, maybe the Killing spinor is in turn derived from twistor spinors, but because of known curvature restrictions, this is not the case, and the Killing spinor is what is known as irreducible. Nevertheless, you can actually show that you can combine these two things, and you can show that the Killing spinor is indeed a product of two twistor spinors, but where now you have to use the Tucholsky connection instead of the ordinary Levi-Civita connection. So this particular point, together with the whole structure of symmetries and hidden symmetries of this system, suggests that there might be some interesting geometry underlying this system. And this is the question that I want to address today. And moreover, I want to argue that this can be more naturally understood at the full nonlinear level of the Einstein equations. The main tool will be some ideas coming from twistor theory. So what is twistor theory? As is known, this was proposed by Penrose, and the basic philosophy is that differential equations in space-time are equivalent to holomorphic geometry in some other space that is called twistor space. So there are some deep mathematical results concerning this equivalence, but the problem is that the bulk curvature must be self-dual, which is too restrictive for general relativity. Nevertheless, the twistor approach combines in a remarkable way different kinds of geometry, more precisely conformal, complex, projective, and spin geometry, and this will all play a crucial role in this talk. And some of these connections can be understood from the Riemannian approach to twistor theory, in which twistor space is understood as a space of complex structures of a Riemannian manifold. And you have these remarkable isomorphisms between complex structures, maximal isotropic spaces, and projective spinors. So there are two points that I want to emphasize here for the rest of the talk that are important. The first point is that in twistor theory, one usually works with these spaces as a whole, in the sense that, for example, you work with the whole space of complex structures and you ask special conditions for this space, which lead you to self-dual curvature. Whereas in this talk, we will choose only one element in this space and we will ask special conditions for this element. And the second point is that because of these isomorphisms generalized to other signatures as well, whenever we are working with a specific object, such as a complex structure, Any special conditions for this object will translate into special conditions for the associated objects. In particular, this means that even though we will find spinors to be a very useful tool for calculations, the geometry is not necessarily intrinsically spinorial. So I won't have time to get into details of calculations. So my goal today is simply to mention the key structures that are needed to understand the geometry, together with some of the applications of these, but in a very schematic way. So let me then introduce the first part of machinery that we need. An important remark is that we will allow different signatures of the metric or even more generally complex manifolds. And in this setting, the basic object that we need here and in the rest of the talk is an almost complex structure. So this is a tensor field that squares to minus the identity and that preserves the metric. So you can show that any such tensor field is equivalent to two projective spinors via this this formula here. Now, there is an important notion that we need, that is the notion of integrability of a complex structure. And this goes as follows. If you, the complex structure induces a splitting of the tangent bundle into eigenspaces, and we say that J is integrable if the eigenspaces are involutive under the Lie bracket, and it is half integral if only one of them is. The connection with general relativity comes from the fact that you can show that an eigenspace is involutive if and only if there is a shear free null chadic congruence in spacetime. And the last important point is that there is an intrinsic gauge freedom in this construction that has to do with the fact that an almost complex structure is associated not only to a particular metric, but to the conformal class of metrics. So this means that it is more naturally understood as a property of a conformal structure. And the other kind of gauge freedom that we need is rescalings of spinors, because as I mentioned, these are really projective spinors. So this means that the formalism should be invariant under rescaling of the spinors. So at the end of the day, you end up with the gauge group that contains these gauge transformations, and then you simply apply the usual machinery from Young-Mills theory or fiber bundle technology. And so you construct principal and associated vector bundles, and the fields that you want to study are simply sections of these bundles. So the first application of this part of the machinery is the following result, that an almost complex structure alone already induces a natural connection on these more general bundles. This means that this is a connection of this covariant under both conformal and projective transformations. Furthermore, you can show that J is half integrable if one of the spinors is parallel under this connection, and it is integrable if both of the spinors are parallel. And finally, if you define this operator here, C tilde, this is technically what is called a partial connection, or you can also think of this object as a sort of Dolbo operator in the sense of complex geometry. Then if the Weyl curvature is algebraically special, this operator commutes with itself. So why do we care about these geometrical results? Well, first of all, I won't show the proof of this theorem, but the important ingredient for the construction of this connection is a combination of something that is called the Lie form, the complex structure, together with the CHP connection. Now, we see also from this theorem that integrability is encoded in parallel spinors. And this condition is particularly important, and I will comment on it in the next slide. And finally, the fact that this commutativity property gives origin to some sort of flat connection, which in turn produces a natural Deram complex that we will study in a minute, together with some parallel frames that are also needed in the construction. Okay. So the condition that the spinor is parallel is not only conceptually clear in the sense of physically and geometrically, but it's also very useful in practice because it allows you to deduce lots of algebraic and curvature identities that are very useful for explicit calculations. And to illustrate this point, you can one can work out as an exercise the simple example in which you have an ordinary parallel spinor. And the point is that from this condition alone, you can already deduce the general structure of the metric, and you can reduce the full nonlinear Einstein equations to a single scalar equation, and you can reconstruct the whole geometry from a scalar field. The only subtle point to do that is that you need some sort of integration machinery, and this is related to the RAM complex that I just mentioned. So let me introduce that part of the machinery before showing you the main result. So the most basic thing that we need for integration procedure is the fact that whenever one has a sub-bundle of the tangent bundle that is involutive, then this automatically has a structure of something that is called a Lie algebraic. This has some general mathematical definition that we don't need in this talk, but the important point is that these structures come naturally with the RAM complex. And this is the complex in four dimensions. Importantly, this complex is locally exact, which means that whenever you have a form that is closed, you can find locally a potential for this form in the sense of this equation. But there are some sort of integration constants. So the representation of a field in terms of a potential is not unique because you have this freedom to add this kind of constants that are not really constants on the whole manifold, only along certain directions. So again, this is the most basic structure that you need to produce an integration procedure. The only extra subtlety is that, as I mentioned, we need forms with values on bundles, on vector bundles. But the extension to that case is easy because we already constructed a connection that I called C, and you can show that, again, if the Weyl curvature is algebraically special, then you get, again, a locally exact RAM complex. So this might be a bit abstract, but in practice, in explicit calculations, what this translates into the fact that whenever you have an equation of this form, then you can find locally a potential such that this formula holds. So this is in four dimensions, but the general procedure extends also to higher dimensions. And so the last point that we need before the main result is that the whole construction, as I mentioned, is conformally invariant. But the Einstein equations are not conformally invariant. So how can we apply this machinery to that case? And the answer is actually a very simple trick that we can study more general system. These are called the Einstein-Weyl equations, or equivalent in this context, the conformal Einstein equations. And the point is simply that you consider a conformal structure with a connection that preserves this structure. These are called Weyl connections. They are more general, for example, than the Levi-Civita connection. And the field equations are simply the Einstein equations with respect to this more general Weyl connection. So these are the field equations. But these equations are conformally invariant, so you can apply the whole machinery to the study of this system. And at the end of the day, if you want to study the ordinary Einstein equations, once you got the final formulas you wanted to get, you can simply break conformal invariance by choosing a specific constant value of the extra degree of freedom. So you recover the ordinary Einstein equations. The result of the application of this general machinery is the following theorem, that if you now have a conformal structure that satisfies the conformal Einstein equations and that is algebraically special, then you can show that the conformal metric has exactly this structure that is composed of three pieces, where the first piece is a conformally flat metric. The second piece is given by this sort of integration constants that I mentioned, and is conformally half-flat. And the last piece is exactly something that is called a Hertz potential. Now, let me recall that the Hertz potential is something that appears in perturbation theory when you are studying the linearized Einstein equations. But remarkably, this construction is fully nonlinear. This means that the Hertz potential still play an important role even at the full nonlinear level of the Einstein equations. And this extra scalar field, phi, is required to satisfy, as a consequence of the conformal Einstein equations, an equation that I call a conformally hyperheavenly equation, that is this terrible equation here. But the name comes from the fact that this is a conformal invariant coordinate-free generalization of an important result of Plewanski and Robinson that is called a hyperheavenly construction. And the last important result is that the linear term, if you restrict to the linear term in this equation, this is exactly the Tucholsky equation. So let me then summarize the key points of this construction. Essentially, the main point is the choice of a complex structure, because once you have chosen a complex structure, then this determines already everything you need, like a conformally invariant connection, and you can show that integrability of this complex structure is encoded in parallel spinors. And you can deduce that all these different kinds of hidden symmetries, like twister spinors or Killing spinors and so on, with respect to different connections, they are all coming from the fact that you have parallel spinors under this connection. Furthermore, we have shown that we can reduce the full nonlinear conformal Einstein equations to a single scalar equation, and we can reconstruct the full conformal structure from this equation. And finally, key facts from perturbation theory, such as the Tucholsky equations and Hess potentials and field reconstructions, are geometrically encoded in this nonlinear construction. But again, this is geometrically clear. It's not ad hoc in the sense that, again, everything is coming from the choice of a complex structure. Okay, so this is what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have time for some questions. Yeah, please.
So this formula you wrote for the metric, is this a perturbation formula or is this a nonlinear one?
No, it's fully nonlinear.
Okay, another question. So you wrote Einstein equations for this connection, but so this is essentially, if you look, the principal part is the same as the normal Einstein equations, and you get some source terms coming from the from this connection. That's
yes.
One way of viewing it.
Yes. Yes, the principal part is the same. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, please, the microphone. Yeah.
Two remarks in the question. I mean, first of all,
yeah.
The mic is on. Okay. The complex structure that you got, the almost complex structure, is actually a self-dual. So the almost complex structure that you got is actually a self-dual anti-symmetric tensor field.
Yes, exactly.
And so is the condition that you have for integrability is simply Maxwell's equations, if you write it in this way?
Not exactly.
Okay.
Not exactly, yeah. It's not the same, the Maxwell equations for it.
Second point, I mean, you had the covariantly constant spinner, and if you require Einstein's equation, then this is basically all the PP waves that you got.
Yeah, yeah. For that case, yeah.
Finally, what I was a little bit surprised about, the metric that you had,
yes.
This additional piece, the C piece,
yes.
that you got from the Deram complex, that
yes.
has to be anti-symmetric. So in this case,
no, this
because
is
the form, right?
No, this is symmetric. This C that appears there is symmetric.
But as far as I remember, I mean, I got this wrong. I mean, when you introduced it, you had it in the Deram complex, and
yes.
you had the exterior derivative. But what would be the exterior derivative of a tensor?
Yeah, yeah. You know, no, but the construction is very subtle. I mean, you produce some forms, but are forms. These are differential forms, not on the whole manifold, but only on the sub-bundle. So they are.
They are vector-valued forms.
I'm sorry?
They are vector-valued forms.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. If we have no more questions, then let's thank Bernardo again.